You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Ricker.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, our next guest has worked to get Democrats elected for decades, from Jesse Jackson to Barack Obama. Over the years, he's seen the demographics of this country shift, along with the passage of legislation like the Voting Rights Act and the Immigration and Nationality Act in the 1960s. The result, he says, is a new multiracial, progressive majority. That is, he says, if the Democrats don't miss the boat.
Steve Phillips joins us now. He's a co-founder of the social justice organization Power Pack, a regular commentator on NBC, CNN, and Fox News, and the author of the new book, Brown is the New White, How the Demographic Revolution Has Created a New American Majority. Steve, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, Steve, you said that this new multiracial progressive majority is there, and it's people of color who tend to vote Democratic combined with white progressives. But to take advantage of this block, you say that Democrats have got to let go of their focus on white swing voters. Can you make your case that the progressive majority to win elections is already here for Democrats?
Right. I mean, it's no accident that America elected its first black president when we elected our first black president. So since the changes of the civil rights movement, particularly the Immigration and Nationality Act, as well as the Voting Rights Act, which allowed many more African Americans to vote, but from that time period, the number of people of color in the country has grown dramatically. People of color used to be 12% of the population, now grown to 38% of the population, and continuing to grow more rapidly, really, frankly, every day. And so the cornerstones of this new majority are the larger, increasing numbers of people of color who are the progressive ones, who constitute 23% of all eligible voters. And there's always been an underappreciated but meaningful minority of whites who have voted progressive. That's 28% of the eligible voter population. And together, that's 51% of the American voting populace. That's the grouping that elected Obama, and even more importantly, reelected him when he lost 5 million white votes but still got reelected.
If the math is there, as you say it is, are Democrats doing enough, in your opinion, to capitalize on that, to get those votes counted on Election Day?
No, absolutely they're not. And that was my sense of alarm and why I really wanted to write this book, as a wake-up call to sound an alarm that the progressive movement, the Democratic Party, does not properly appreciate what has happened in terms of the demographic shift. And I've been very alarmed. People keep talking about Obama was a one-off and it was an aberration and once in a lifetime. We'll never repeat that. Whereas, in fact, he represented the cresting of a movement which is continuing on even without him, but it will only manifest itself if the party moves massive amounts of money into hiring staff and partnering with community organizations to mobilize voters instead of wasting money on 30-second TV ads chasing the conservative white swing voter.
Is it a foregone conclusion that the majority of people of color today and those who will come of age to vote are progressive?
Well, it's not a foregone conclusion, but in a country where the political debate at the moment is, are we going to round up 12 million people of color and ship them out of the country, and are we going to impose a ban on any Muslims or anyone who looks like a Muslim coming from the Middle East to come here, that tenor and tone of that politics tends to make people more progressive. And you pair that with the history of this country, which has was founded on the exploitation of the groupings of color, that they are inherently progressive because of the conditions that they are in and how they have been treated in this country.
So given that you're talking about the current conditions of the country right now, is it possible that those conditions could change, that we could be looking at, if you're a Democrat and you want to get these votes, that we're looking at maybe a limited window of opportunity for a particular party, Democrats in this case?
Oh, absolutely. And so there's very much so a limited window, and that the last chapter of the book is called Conservatives Can Count. And so prior to the emergence of Donald Trump, many of them were very much on a more intentional and deliberative path to make inroads in the communities of color, right? The Koch brothers investing millions of dollars in Group Libre to try to organize and spread the conservative gospel among Latinos. Republicans elevating several different individuals of color into high political positions, three other presidential candidates, U.S. Senator Tim Scott, governors in New Mexico. So they were definitely on the path and more rapidly than Democrats were, I think, who were lulled into a sense of complacency by Obama's election. Trump has scrambled that equation now, so we'll be fascinated to see how it all plays itself out. But the window is definitely closing.
We're talking right now with Steve Phillips, author of Brown is a New Black, How the Demographic Revolution Has Created a New American Majority. He says that Democrats have the multiracial majority that they need to win elections, and if they let go of their focus on white swing voters, they need to do that and focus more on people of color. And demographers have been talking for a while about the year 2044, which is when they think that the United States will become a majority-minority country. And you think that's the wrong way to think about it. How come?
Right. I do think it's the wrong way, I think, for two reasons. One is that it sets up a dichotomy or a really oppositional framework, is that people of color will become the majority, and implied in that, and then they will start oppressing all white people. So it's all white people versus all people of color, which is, you know, not that helpful. Also, 2044 is a long way away, right, in terms of, like, you know, waiting until that actually comes about. But I think one of the most important reasons why it's inaccurate is that it doesn't. There's a significant underappreciated, a very significant, meaningful minority of whites who are already supportive of issues of racial justice, social justice, economic justice. And so from the days of abolitionism to the Civil Rights Movement to allies of the Black Lives Matter movement, you have a meaningful minority of whites who want to see a better society based on justice and equality. That population, partnered with a growing population of people of color, is a majority right now. We don't have to wait till 2044. We can and should be motivating that, mobilizing that right now.
There's a common narrative out there right now that Republicans swept into office to take majorities in Congress thanks to white swing voters, and that's why I think a lot of the emphasis you're talking about has been there. You don't agree with that take. So how do you frame what happened during that Republican sweep?
Right. It's not even a question of interpretation. It's a question of looking at the math. And that was one of the most surprising aspects of my research, was to see that top Democratic Party officials and progressive had that conclusion. It's like, well, we were too radical, we were too strong on health care, therefore the voters swung against us, and then we lost the House and we lost the Senate. The reason Democrats lost the House is that the Republican drop-off in voters from 2008 to 2010 was 7 million votes, which is about normal for an off-year election. The Democratic drop-off from 8 to 10 was 26 million people didn't vote who had showed up in 2008, unmotivated, uninspired, unorganized, and ignored, and they decided to ignore the election. That's why we lost the House, not that the voters in the middle swung the other way. Our voters stayed home.
Well, obviously, Democrats and Republicans are going to want to court these voters that you're talking about. So how does it, so you're pulling for Democrats. What do you want to see Democrats do to take care of this group of voters that you say are so important to winning and shaping the future?
So I think there's three specific things that can be done. So one is putting forward an unapologetic social justice agenda that speaks to the realities of inequality and discrimination in our society, and that too often those realities are muted, and people don't want to. Even someone as radical, you know, as Bernie Sanders, running as a socialist, backed away from the issue of reparations, right? And so those hesitancies are because of a fear of alienating white swing voters. So the policy agenda has to be unapologetic. And then the next is that the resources have to go into the organizing people. Obama didn't just win because he was an aspiring candidate. He got 200,000 more black votes in Ohio in 2012 than he did in 2008. And he did that because they hired 650 full-time staff people to go into the communities who were from those communities, talk to churches, talk to community groups. And then the third step is that it's time to desegregate the office of the vice presidency. There's never been a vice president of color, never been a vice presidential candidate of color, and that's strictly because of a calculation on what you think the electorate will tolerate. Either of these Democrats are going to need to have a younger, inspiring candidate of color on the balance their ticket if they're going to galvanize this electorate.
To take that social justice agenda that you started with, I mean, that is something that either party could lay claim to, and it could be seen as a nonpartisan issue. Why do you think that Democrats would have the better swing at that?
Well, either party could, but the Republicans have been really had struck an alliance with the corporate elite, and they have put forward a worldview that people are poor because of personal traits and failings, and that business just gets it, government just gets in the way of business, and the great free market can reign. So their worldview does not accommodate specific steps and intentional actions to address inequality, although much of the inequality in this country, most of it actually, was created through intentional government action. So the opportunity is greater on the Democratic side, but even there's still this hesitancy, right, that there's talk, raising taxes, is that too radical? You could end poverty in this country. I talk about this my book around a wealth tax, not an income tax, but a wealth tax just on the top 1%. Tax them at 2% of their wealth. They should be able to make 10% on that wealth, so it's only a question of them getting rich a little bit slower. That would generate $500 billion a year. Think tanks say you can end poverty for $250 billion a year. You could end poverty just by taxing people who have $13 million or more in assets.
We're talking right now with national political activist and commentator Steve Phillips. He's the author of the new book, Brown is the New White, How the Demographic Revolution Has Created a New American Majority. And we're looking at what this would look like. Progressive white people joined with a multiracial group of voters, constitutes that bloc to win elections for Democrats.
We want to hear from you. Do you think Democrats should be focusing more on people of color to build that majority voting bloc? Are both parties too focused on white voters? What would it take to see more diverse representation in elected officials, political operatives, vice presidential office? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking with national political activist and commentator Steve Phillips. He's the author of Brown is the New White, How the Demographic Revolution Has Created a New American Majority. And he says that Democrats have the multiracial majority that they need to win elections, to influence policy, but they've got to let go of their focus on white swing voters and work instead on building relationships with people of color.
And we want to hear from you. Do you think Democrats should focus more on people of color? What would Republicans need to do to win them over? What are you hearing on issues of race from this year's presidential candidates? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234.
And we go to our callers right now. We've got Rhonda on the line in Milwaukee. Rhonda, hi.
Hi. I'm one of those white progressive voters that have been waiting for a long time to have a candidate that I don't have to hold my nose to vote for. I really feel like our concerns aren't addressed by the majority in the Democratic Party who are in power. And I'm really frustrated. But I'm also really happy this election to get to vote for someone like Bernie Sanders, who I feel really does represent progressive concerns.
And do you feel like what our guest is saying, that being more inclusive to people of color is part of what you're looking for as politics moves forward?
Absolutely, yes. I think that, the white progressives recognize the white supremacy and the impact that it has on our friends who are people of color who, are facing significant sort of disparities in the criminal justice system and the economic system. And we want radical change. We really feel that, that our country is being controlled by a small majority of wealthy people and that it has a really pernicious effect on our democracy. We're also really concerned about the student debt that affects so many people of color and, white progressive students who, like me, I'm almost done with my PhD and I have over $100,000 in debt. How do you dig yourself out of that kind of a hole?
Rhonda, thanks a lot for that comment. And Steve, what do you say to that? And also, what would you like to see not just from the Democratic Party on this front, but also from white progressives?
Yeah, well, I think that the clearly Sanders has energized and has attracted and mobilized particularly the white progressive sector of the electorate in a fashion. And he's making the argument, which I think is correct, that we have to expand the electorate and we have to excite people and we have to turn them out. So he's totally correct on all of those pieces. The next challenge is he going to be able to articulate a message that is galvanizing and mobilizing to voters of color? And I think there he's going to have to become more intentional and more explicit about racial inequality, racial discrimination within our society, as well as this issue around the vice presidential pick creates an opportunity. He could come out now and say he was going to pick somebody like, you know, State Senator Nina Turner from Ohio as his VP, and that would be a very galvanizing statement.
So we've got a Democratic debate in Milwaukee tonight. Is there a candidate that you think is doing better at this, building this coalition that you're talking about between people of color and white progressives? I mean, Hillary is the person that traditionally people think does better with people of color.
Yeah, so people have more familiarity with the Clintons than they do with Senator Sanders. So it's going to be fascinating. They're coming out of the first two states, which are, you know, fairly unrepresentative states, but they're, you know, fairly equal and neck and neck. And now they have to make their argument to a more diverse electorate. And so that's where we want to see more deeds behind the actions. They're going to commit resources to hiring from these communities and moving many millions of dollars in that direction. Are they going to put forward a policy agenda which deals with the police violence within the communities of color, and that it's more aggressive on immigration? If the Republicans can talk about rounding up everybody and shipping them out of the country, we can talk about providing legal status now and citizenship for people now, not 10 years down the road, and recognize that the whole issue of who is illegal is a complicated question in a country that was stolen from its original inhabitants.
All right. Thank you, Rhonda, for that call. And we're going to go next to Joe in Milwaukee. Joe, hi.
We basically tried the electoral schema that your guest is advocating in the 2012 recall campaign in June. We had Tom Barrett at the top of the ticket, and we had that very dynamic, great firefighter trade unionist as lieutenant governor candidate. And we lost because the African Americans voted at a 23% rate. They stayed home, and Scott Walker got reelected. And until we get the African American community to vote in over 60 to 70% numbers, we are going to be losing these elections, especially here in Wisconsin.
Joe, thanks a lot for that call. And how do you get this voting bloc that you're talking about, Steve, to get out and vote?
So what all of the research shows that the most effective way to get people to vote is to have a friend or a neighbor or a trusted relationship ask them to vote. And so too many, I don't know the specifics around the recall campaign, how that money was spent. I do know that in general, Democratic politics in general, most of the money is spent on television ads. And that is ineffective in terms of getting people out to vote. So in North Carolina, for example, the Democrats spent $19 million in negative television ads trying to defeat Tom Tillis in that Senate race. That same money could have hired 400 full-time organizers to go door-to-door for an entire year. And so similarly, I think in terms of the, I know lots of money, many millions of dollars were spent on those recall elections. I don't know how much of that money was spent hiring people from the communities to talk to their neighbors, to their fellow churchgoers, to their fellow community members.
And Wisconsin has a new photo ID law in place this year. It's also got a bill in the works that would eliminate elections deputies who can register people door to door. Other states may be looking at laws like these. They may have them already. Do you see that affecting this multiracial majority and waiting that you're talking about?
Yeah, well, it's no accident that they're doing these things. They're doing them when that they're doing them, right? And that, you know, I talk in Chapter 8 about there's two tools that the Republicans have. One is seduction, and the other is suppression. And so throwing up as many barriers as possible to make it harder for people to vote is the essence of what that is. At the same time, other places are doing online voter registration, making it easier to vote. I mean, we're a fairly high-tech society right now, and so we should be able to really streamline. Oregon and California are having automatic registration. You are automatically registered. You have to actively get out of being registered.
And Wisconsin is looking, just to jump in, is looking at online voter registration as part of that bill, but you do need an ID for that.
Right. Well, that would be a step forward. But this whole issue of the fundamental question is, do we want people to vote or not? And so if we do, there's proven steps that we can take to actually have significant increases in voter participation.
And Steve, just briefly, as we wrap up, what's at stake to you, as you see it, for Democrats if they don't make the most of this opportunity that you're describing?
Oh, I think they're going to lose, that they will lose the White House, and they'll certainly fail to take back the Senate. And that's what we've seen. That's the incontrovertible evidence of the past 8 years, is when Democrats have invested heavily and turned out the multiracial new majority they've won, 2008, 2012, when they've run away from the president, when they've run away from this progressive agenda and have chased the shrinking sector of the conservative white swing voter, they have lost. And that's what's at stake in this election, is victory or defeat.
Steve, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Steve Phillips, the author of Brown is the New White, How the Demographic Revolution Has Created a New American Majority.